people don't like her, and you can get, or some people don't like her, and you can see why.
Alabama tape projection.
Hey, welcome. It's us at Taking It Down, where we give you a new angle at looking at television. Taking It Down is produced by the Alabama Take, a family of podcasts, and a site where you can find essays and articles on television, movies, music, books, sports, and even more. We at Taking It Down are me, I'm Blaine, the editor-in-chief of the Alabama Take. We also have a touring musician and former filmmaker, Adam Morrow. We have our specialist in media at a New England college, Mr. Donovan Reinwald. And we have Natalie Morrow, our resident expert in fantasy, sci-fi, comics, trashy reality TV, and plenty of Beyonce. Each week, this podcast is a short video segment featured on the Alabama Takes YouTube channel, where we open the floor for a little more than TV and streaming at times, or just an added TV segment. It's released each Tuesday evening around 5 p.m. Central. Taking It Down itself is audio only and hits all podcast apps, the website, and YouTube bright and early every Tuesday morning. Subscribe or follow in your favorite podcast app, and you won't miss an episode. Talk to you every Tuesday. Yep, it's us. And by us, I mean it's me, Blaine, and it's Donovan. No Adam. Adam's doing music this week, this weekend, and this week. Go see Speckled Bird. He is the front man for Speckled Bird. He's also on guitar duties for The Prescriptions. Speckled Bird's playing with The Prescriptions. So in the front, you hear that Adam is a traveling and a studio musician, and that's what he's doing. Natalie was with us on the YouTube segment. If you listen to us Tuesday morning when we drop, you can wait a little while and check out the YouTube segment. It's all about the challenge and a little bit about the Traitors. We talk a little reality TV this week. That's our want of late, but you can see Natalie there. And instead, it's just me and Donovan. Donovan, what's up?
I've just been, for the last 5 minutes, thinking about how Adam is going full on early period Michael Stipe on the road this weekend.
Tell me what you're getting at there. What am I missing?
You know, like, he had the crazy hair, right? Yeah. He'd do, like, weird stuff, like, just, like, squirt, like, ketchup and mustard on his head, and, like, in the middle of a show, and I just know it's Adam right now. He's covered in mustard.
You want me to tell you a funny story about Bob Dylan?
Please.
I think it was Mike Campbell, guitar player for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, noticed that during concerts, when in between songs, when the lights would go out and they would change guitars and those kinds of things, Bob would walk to the drum stand and pour something over his head and shake it about. And he smelled horrible, absolutely horrible. And I think Mike or someone asked him, "What are you doing there, Bob?" And he said he was pouring vodka over his head. And he said, "It makes your hair look great. Look at it." Hopefully Adam's not out there pouring vodka over his own head.
He's got a handle. He's just dumping it. He's just dumping it out.
With his Michael Stipe wild hair. Early days, Michael Stipe. We're kind of goofing off a little because we only have one thing to talk about this week, and that's True Detective Night Country Episode 2, appropriately titled Part 2.
Boy, I tell you what, if we're only going to talk about one thing.
I know.
I'm still pretty high on this show.
I am too. So, all right, so I'll ask this to begin.
Sure.
A dip in quality, or at least a dip in your interest on this one? A little slower episode for you or not?
No.
Okay.
No, I actually found that I am curious how this is going to fit. Since it's only 6 episodes, I'm curious how this is going to fit as part of 6 episodes. But for me watching it, I was still very interested in what was going on, you know?
For
things
sure.
Get like a little deeper, and like things kind of move towards like where you kind of knew they were going.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like obviously they're going to get together to investigate this.
Yeah.
This crime. Right? So that's, but take me for a ride.
The next 4 episodes cannot move at this pace, I will say. I did not find it slow.
That is what I meant with, I wonder how it's going to, because we only have 6 episodes.
Yeah.
It can't have the same pace.
Mm-hmm. I did see complaints online that it was a little slow. Not for me, really.
Not for me.
You know, do you have these thoughts where you're in the middle of an episode and you're thinking, is this not close to the end? I did think that. Now,
interesting.
With the first episode, I did not. I was just like, let's go, let's go.
this one, the end caught me too, for the same as with the first one. Right? Yeah, I was like, okay. Wow, that's really been only been, it's been an hour. Okay.
You know, you get a sense as a viewer when the ending is about to come, like, oh, this is going to be the last scene. Well, I thought that a couple of times. And it wasn't because I was bored. I just had the internal clock, I guess, going where I was like, oh, is it not 50 minutes yet?
I guess for me, if you put a corpsicle, several corpsicles, in an ice rink. I'm gonna stay interested.
Yeah. Well, yes. Let's get into it. Just in case you are new to us, maybe? I don't know. You're probably not new to True Detective or us, I'm guessing. No Nick Pizzolatto this season, which seems to make this show much more focused on the ladies. The women are driving the story in a very, very good way, I think. It's well handled in order to do that. It doesn't seem forced. Mm-mm. It doesn't seem like, well, we got to have a story about women who are detectives now. You know, those first three seasons were pretty guy-heavy, men dealing with trauma, kind of heavy. They tried to rectify that with Rachel McAdams in season two. Not quite.
That's true. Poor Rachel McAdams. She deserved better.
Yeah, it was a rocky season, season two. I still loved watching it.
Season.
Didn't you still love watching it week to week, though?
Not really.
Really?
Like I almost feel like I finished it because I didn't think it was like horrible, but it never quite got good.
No, it never got good, but
if I hadn't seen the first season, I probably wouldn't have finished it.
Okay. I thought Colin Farrell's performance was really good.
Yeah, he was good. There was some good stuff. It just felt like the much less than the sum of its parts because Rachel McAdams was good and mm-hmm. There were some good things and in the abstract for me, like the mystery was kind of like a classic California noir, interesting. Yeah. But everything together, it just fizzled. It was kind of a dud.
And did you watch the third season with Mahershala Ali?
I did. I liked his. I liked two things about that season. I liked that we found out that actually Nick Pizzolatto is a big old sweetie pie and he just wants people to be happy. And and I liked the performance that Mahershala Ali gave, especially Stella. Going between the younger man investigating and the old man investigating his younger self, trying to remember what he's forgotten.
Yeah, with the dementia or something similar setting in. Yeah, I thought season three was underrated. I think it got a lot of flack following that second season that was not so hot.
Yeah, it wasn't like the best, but I thought it was good. I thought it was doing something kind of different too, that differentiated it. But I think maybe it wasn't what people were between the second season and perhaps it wasn't what. If you loved the first season and you wanted to return to that, it wasn't quite like it had some times where like maybe you thought, especially at the beginning, right? You remember like the kids have like the stuff on them, the kind of like weird figures, but it goes not down that road at all.
Right.
Whereas this one actually I think is much more aligned with that spirit of season one.
Oh, for sure. And with a new showrunner and head writer, her name is Isa Lopez, and she's doing phenomenal work.
And director, too.
And director, yes.
Showrunner, writer, director, there which, I think she's been very good. The 2 hours of her work I've seen so far, it makes me, apparently she made a pretty good movie that people have compared favorably to some of Guillermo del Toro's, and I could have told you the name of the movie 10 minutes ago.
That's
Now that I'm saying it out loud, I can't think of it.
Her name is.
If you want to check it out,
Isa Lopez. So you can look that up. We'll probably have to look it up too because that movie sounds promising.
This is another thing I've been, and maybe this is just like a back of your head kind of thing. But do you think it was a really maybe a? I think it might have been a really good choice to not just. This season is more focused on the women. The women are the main characters. Obviously, the director and writer is a woman, but she's also Mexican. And I kind of wonder if there's like a... I've been thinking about like someone from kind of like the outside in, mm-hmm. looking in. Like somebody, like obviously, she's watched, American TVs and movies and is part of the American entertainment industry. But also, I wonder if she has a unique perspective because of that. I've kind of been thinking about that. Because there are people who are on the outside in or looking in this... story,
roping in those Native Alaskan people. Who's what type of Native?
That's what was making me think about it.
Yeah, that seems to track there. It starts with an I, and I'm blanking
like
on
Inuit.
Thank you. Yeah, the Inuit people who have been a huge part of this story. Is Detective Navarro a Inuit?
I believe she is. Yeah, because yeah, her sister has the
The tattoos.
You can't see. This is the radio. Yeah, the tattoos on her face that are right. The traditional.
Well, hey, I'm going to do something. I think I'm going to do this for all six episodes. I'm going to do something that I don't ever do, and that's bring up or think about the epigraph. I always forget about it, but then by the end, I've totally forgotten it. So here's what it said. For we do not know what beast the night dreams when its hours grow too long for even God to be awake. That's our epigraph that began the very first episode. Didn't begin this episode, by the way. That's why I'm bringing it back up. So.
Still works for me as an epigraph.
Oh, it's lovely.
Even just, like, I like that, like, even the people there are like, no, this is a weird place. You know, like, one of the characters is like, this is Ennis.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, the nights get late. You see things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone knows this is just weird.
Another nice little Twin Peaks kind of thing. Okay, this was happening before Twin Peaks, obviously, where, oh, this is a weird place. Man, oh man, Jodie Foster is killing it.
She's so good. She's such an asshole in this
perfect
role. Like, she perfectly inhabits that, too, right? Like, you like her, or I like her, at least. You like watching her,
oh, yeah.
But, like, she's a prick.
No, she has to walk this fine line of being an asshole and being likable. Like, you still want to root for her as a protagonist. I never stopped rooting for her, and I just thought, ooh, don't say that. That's kind of mean. Okay, well, I'm with you.
Same. Yeah, she's fantastic.
Yeah, and here's an example of balancing. When she visits the guy, Adam, the geologist, and he tries to explain to her what's happening at the research lab where this horror has happened, where the people disappeared and they found it as a huge block of ice down the path. When she says, try it in English, nerd. She takes that beat to say nerd rather than say, you know, most actors would have said try it in English, comma, nerd, but she takes that beat. I just love it. She had that wry look on her face, like wink.
Yeah, you know, that did make me laugh.
It's a good moment.
She's very good. Even just like, and of course, like, she's just, what am I trying to say? If I say it long enough, I'll figure it out. I'm trying to think about, like, the way she inhabits the space in the show and the way other characters react to her. And it's the same kind of thing where, like, you can see, like, people don't like her. Uh-huh. And you can get, or some people don't like her, and you can see why. But also you're like, she's inherently fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
Like, 95% of the population of Ennis cannot stand her.
Yeah.
And I love that about a protagonist. Like, oh, God, here comes Liz Danvers. Fuck that lady. I love that. Because you know why? I feel like that most of my days. When I walk up to a crowd, I'm like, they're probably thinking, here comes Blaine. Fuck that guy. I loved Rose, played by Fiona Shaw. I mentioned her last week. I said she's going to have an interesting character because you don't put Fiona Shaw on a show just to make her find dead people. You have her say interesting things. And she says one of the most interesting and subtly horrific things in a show I've heard in a while, which is she's talking about the dead. She's talking about the dead, and she says, some dead want to see you again. Some want to tell you something you need to hear, and some want to just take you with them. Woo.
Spooky.
And figuring that out is a challenge, so just avoid them altogether, maybe.
Yeah, say stay away from the dead, I think.
Now, the dead she sees is her ex-lover, Travis. Travis, interestingly enough, is, we find out this episode, Travis Cole. Season 1, Russ Cole. Same spelling, apparently.
Where did, I was trying to remember, and I this was me being lazy and not looking it up. Mm-hmm. Where didn't Russ go up north?
No, he does. He gives a little monologue about,
right,
where he was born in, somewhere in the continental U.S., I forget, Missouri maybe, or somewhere, and then his dad takes him to Alaska, he says, for a while, then he comes back to Texas. So, this connects to him, but the timeline just doesn't work.
Mm-mm.
You know, they're using iPhones, there's no way that Travis would have been Russ Cole's dad, because Russ Cole was doing investigative work in, like, 95, 96, and then...
I thought maybe, like, brother. Possibly.
Interesting.
Yeah. Maybe.
And if they never address it, I love it nonetheless.
Oh yeah, I'm totally fine. Just like with the spiral tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's interesting, it's important in the context of this season, but it's also a great nod to season one, right? Like, this was important there. We're gonna remember how much you loved, you loved that.
Rose is the one who brings it back up and gives a little explanation to say that this is older than the town of Ennis. It's older than us. You know, this is like a demonic even, I would think. But I think the spiral in this season is inverted from the first season. I think it goes the other.
Is it inverted?
I think okay. It is. And apparently this is a real symbol for pedophile rings, sadly.
Oh, cool.
I don't even like mentioning that kind of shit, but apparently it is, I think.
Yeah, I'm fine with you not having, like, being certain about that.
Yeah, I don't, I read that on a message board, so if that person's correct, then I'm correct. That's about it. That opening scene was so killer, so amazing, with them back at the, it picks up right where it left off. They're all now at the scene of perhaps a crime. All of the scientists supposedly are there in a huge mishmash, frozen, screaming in terror as they were frozen, apparently. And they start to chainsaw some of them out, right? Or chainsaw around it so they can get that out. And they accidentally cut off one of the guy's arms. And he wakes up, right?
They don't even cut it off.
Oh, it breaks off?
They're trying to lift it because she stops them from chainsawing, right? Because they're going to disturb it.
And he screams, right?
They pull on his arm and it breaks. They snap his arm off. And yeah, someone screams.
He's in a coma in a local hospital now, right? That particular
yes.
scientist.
That's my understanding. But he's in bad shape and he hasn't woken up yet.
Is he Clark? The one
I don't remember. They all kind of blend together. They do blend together, honestly.
But Clark is also the one who went and got the tattoo of this symbol, and he also apparently maybe dated or was friends with Annie, who was killed.
Clark is missing.
Clark's missing altogether.
He's the one at the end.
Okay.
He's not in the... Remember, at the end, they say they're missing a body. They're missing Clark. They don't know where he is.
So we have one in a coma in the hospital. We got the rest accounted for as dead. And we got Clark, who's missing. But he was the guy who has the tattoo on his chest because Annie, who was killed years earlier, he dated perhaps, she had that tattoo on her back.
Same tattoo. They're in pictures together. He's mm-hmm. got her jacket.
That is her tongue found on the floor.
Yeah.
Intense. So is that the she from She's Back?
I don't know.
And why would they
possibly,
be scared if
right?
she was back other than she's dead, I guess?
Yeah. I don't, like, the She's Back, I don't have enough data yet.
No, we don't. But it's you fun know? To speculate.
It is fun to speculate.
We got a hint of why Danvers doesn't like the Beatles. Remember in the opening episode,
yeah.
it plays very loudly, and she says, I don't like the Beatles. And to me, I thought that was just a character beat where you're thinking, God, anybody who doesn't like the Beatles, you got to think something's wrong with them. I thought that was just a neat little character-driven dialogue. But no, we get a hint of one of her memories with a little, maybe a native boy whom we've never heard of. And it could be that Liz is so hardened and unlikable to everyone around her due to grief. I know that's a well-worn path for character development, but I can get behind it with her.
Sure, me too.
Because Jodie Foster is doing it, and it's believable.
Yeah, and we don't know yet, right?
No,
but
we don't.
For me, it would fit too with her relationship with her daughter,
stepdaughter, right?
Yeah, right. Obviously, because I would say the additional layers, right? Because like obviously, her daughter is Indigenous.
Mm-hmm.
Carol isn't. And she treats her in a certain way. I could see some of that, like, overbearing nature brought about by some
mm-hmm.
grief in the past. You know,
overbearing and mean due to loss.
Yeah, and also it would maybe, yeah, we'll see what they do with this because I think it's interesting, but it might fit, too, with the way that she kind of denigrates her Indigenous heritage and doesn't want her to have the tattoos and the... and learn the stories and things like that.
It's my guess they're going to come back around to who this boy is and probably patch that up for us. But I'd also think it would be a nice moment in writing just to have a glimpse and, you know, let us be ambiguous and just think about it.
Yeah.
But either one's fine. Speaking of ambiguity, don't know how much of this is going to connect, but the Tuttles from season one fund the lab where the research is happening. Now, if you don't remember anything about them from season one, apparently they owned some shell corporations that helped fund pedophile rings, possibly. Now, were they ever connected fully at the end of season one?
I thought they were in pretty deep, if I remembered correctly. But
it's been a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not good guys, though.
No. Billy Ray Tuttle, right? That was the big one?
Yeah.
I remember him. Creepy imagery with, like, stuffed deer heads and things
yeah.
like that from season one. interesting if they're going to connect that in a more solid line or just keep it a dotted line. Either way, I'm game.
Yeah, I'm fine either way. Dotted would be completely solid, interesting, as long as it's not contrived. Right. Dotted, fine with that too, mm-hmm. You know. Evil lurks.
Yep. Clark's the missing scientist, likely alive, likely in a relationship with Annie, and same tattoos. We had that earlier. Oh, I've got it here, Donna. I'll bring it, circle back around a little bit. So, Russ Cole was born in Galveston, but ended up with his father in Alaska, and he grew up a lot there, and then came back.
That was it. So I thought maybe, I was pretty sure there was something like that. So yeah, I was thinking, maybe a brother instead of a father.
But the other thing is that at one point in the first season, Russ mentions that his father passed away from leukemia, and I think that's what Travis is supposedly...
He had something, yeah.
He had something.
Well, maybe. Yeah. That wouldn't line up. You're right. The time doesn't line up.
There's even a moment in season one where Russ says that he uses his father's leukemia as an excuse to go undercover or something. I really would like to watch that first season again now that I think about it.
Yeah, now I'm not remembering this.
So Hank's being catfished, right?
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Never has a man been more catfished
than Hank. And maybe deservedly so, because he's not a good guy.
He's kind of, speaking of pricks, he's a prick too, but you're not quite rooting for him as much as you are.
Not really.
Danvers.
His son takes a beautiful, lovely, trauma-based approach to him. He says, well, yeah, he's an animal, but he was raised by an animal to be an animal. And that is a lot of our parents growing up, I think, even in the South, especially in my case.
I mean, it's the This Be the Verse, right? The Philip Larkin poem. Do you know that one?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. That's the same kind of thing, right?
Oh, yeah. I love Philip Larkin.
And I did, and then I loved, she's like, well, you aren't. The girl whose name I can't remember, the daughter, the stepdaughter.
Stepdaughter, yes. She tells him.
I'm a little concerned for him because he does seem kind of like a...
Too good for this world.
A pure ray of light here. And, he's in pretty... Danvers is very comfortable with bossing him around. Obviously, she feels affectionate towards him, but she's also not afraid to use him. And he's in the middle of a creepy investigation, so I'm a little worried for him.
Yeah,
him and his son and his girlfriend or wife, I forget what his partner.
Yeah. How bold is Danvers? Well, she makes him stay out, work overtime, and then she goes straight to his own house.
Yes.
To confront his wife, practically. Not really.
Yes.
She's picking up her stepdaughter, but she basically has to confront his wife and say, yeah, he's still working. I made him.
She doesn't give a shit.
No shit's given. Speaking of no shits given, she's apparently a quite the philanderer around town, which is why a lot of women hate her.
Man, how did you like, or I liked seeing Christopher Eccleston back.
That's where I wanted to go with this.
The police chief. Yeah. I think the last thing I've seen him on HBO was The Leftovers, where he plays the priest. I don't think he's, and then obviously he's great in other stuff too, but it was really nice to see him.
Everyone's going to know him from Doctor Who.
Oh yeah.
And he is enjoyable. So enjoyable.
He's very good. He's a very good character.
He's good.
Or actor, I mean.
You know, he comes in as the person above Danvers, and he comes in there to tell her, no, you're not taking the case. Very much her boss. But she says, she pulls the rule book on him. She kind of has the rule book out and says, I do get 48 hours with the bodies, at least, right, before I have to ship them off so that they're not tampered with or nothing happens to the evidence. And then, of course, later on, they don't play around. They let you know that they had a thing going that's still very much off and on. And to have those two at their age do a sex scene, I thought, it's kind of cool, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They both look great for their age, by the way.
We should all do so well, right?
Yeah, Jodie Foster is amazing looking at her. I don't even know how old she is, honestly, but she's been around for so long. Since I was a kid.
She's older than me.
Amen. Yep.
It looks better than me.
Then the episode ends with Navarro going, figuring out that there is a trailer involved. Where do you put a trailer that you don't really want to be snooped around in at this trailer park kind of thing where they let the snow build up and you basically can't even find the trailers much. And we go in and we probably find what could be Annie's body.
I was wondering.
Or was it a new body?
I'm excited to see if it was. Is it a body? Is it an effigy? Because it almost kind of looked like.
It can't be Annie's body because they would have found Annie's body previously. So no.
Yeah, apologies. Yeah, she's been stabbed. or they had her body because she was stabbed
with
and killed.
With pictures, yeah.
I almost thought it was an effigy. Like, it was just like a doll that he had made.
Plenty of dolls, also smaller ones, hanging from the roof of the trailer.
Man, you know, man, it's his special place.
So what's happening there? Just what do we know? Like, is this belong to whom?
This was the, if I remember correctly, this is Clark. They went through his credit card, right? And okay. And found that he'd done the tattoo, and then they'd interviewed the miner, and he talked mm-hmm. about how he sold I think it was his brother, I don't remember the details, sold the trailer.
Uh-huh.
And they figured out, that's what it was, yep. And they figured out where it may have been. And you know, this seems to fit in too, right? Like, they've got his books, his workbooks, where he starts to draw the spiral.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts to, seems like he's losing it a little bit.
Some red rum energy.
Yeah, big red rum energy.
Yeah.
And then, they investigate the trailer. But we don't really know what it adds up to yet, besides creepy.
For sure. Creepy. He's had some issues with this notion, this symbols overtaking him somehow. It's all wrapped into one another.
Which also, and we'll see how much they want to go with it, but they did choose the epigraph from The King in Yellow. It is kind of something, like it's a cursed thing, right? That like takes you over, essentially.
Right.
It worms its way into your consciousness.
That was one of the ideas from season one, too. That, mm-hmm. that didn't quite play out, it seemed, if I remember correctly. It didn't play out fully, but it was still in the ether toward the end.
It was kind of in the background. I don't think it was as explicit is not the right word. Connected, maybe?
Right.
In season one, as some folks, myself included, although I did very much like season one.
Yeah, that was my biggest disappointment.
Wanted it to be.
That some of that wasn't as substantial as felt alluded to in the beginning. Like, it seemed as if that's what you wanted to use to say your message, but then you dropped the ball, kind of.
Honestly, I was afraid we were going to get a similar situation in Fargo season five with Munch. I was really afraid they were just going to have that the scene with him in Wales.
Yeah, me
and
too.
And it wasn't really going to connect to anything, and then it did perfectly. But that was my fear.
Any thoughts? Any ideas about the miners versus the native people? The water, their water is getting runoff from the mines, turning their water black. It's us versus them kind of thing.
Yeah, my first thought is like this is such a good conflict because it's so real and we've seen it play out how many times.
And like daily,
and also like the miners are not. I think part of what makes it tragic is like the miners aren't wrong, right? Like if the mine goes, the town goes.
Right.
Obviously, it supports the town because the way the system is set up, the only way the town will prosper and people will prosper is to hurt others, is to hurt the native people, and I think that sucks. But I also think it's a really good. I think it's a really good. Tense conflict, and I like that we have this with the miners in the town, the indigenous people, and the colonizers, right? The heavy industry that's come in and destroyed their natural resources, and then we're kind of seeing echoes maybe of this dynamic with Carol and Navarro, right? Even to the point where, like, you know, Navarro is like, hey, you if this had been a white girl that had been killed,
Liz. I think you called her Carol, as in Carol Danvers of the Marvels.
Did I call her Carol? Yeah, you're right. I did call
her
Carol.
Funny,
yeah, Liz. I've probably been calling her Carol. You're right.
No,
that's in the back of my head. Yeah, Liz and Navarro, you know, were to the point of Navarro saying, yeah, if this had been a white girl, I wouldn't be the only one who cares. And, you know, Liz coming back and saying that's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there's that conflict. And then with her daughter or stepdaughter. And I think that's a really good... I like that one of the things I've liked about, and we're only two episodes in,
mm-hmm.
but so far I think it's done a good job of like, okay, this is creepy, this is scary, but also like this is connected to something that's real and upsetting, right? Like people really do get murdered over environmental activism.
Yes.
I was reading a fascinating New York Times article. There's this guy in Brazil, works for the government. His job is to find evidence of uncontacted tribes in the jungle, in the rainforest, and present that evidence to the government. And the government will say, okay, obviously, well, there are people living here. So by these laws that we set up, this can't be developed. And people have tried to kill him. Like he was once attacked by loggers.
Mm-hmm.
who tried, like, literally tried to kill him. He ended up shooting one of them and getting away. But people will happily kill you for things like this. So I think there's like that, there's that real fear of human greed and violence and degradation as we degrade our environment that overlays with the supernatural so well for me.
Yeah, I agree. It's an unspoken tenet of capitalism to do that. And it's becoming more spoken of in the last 20 years or so.
I mean, it's the classic analysis, right? From Marx, right? Like, it relies on an underclass.
Mm-hmm. Somebody's got to suffer,
right? Like, it's a feature. It's not a bug. Right. It's not an unfortunate byproduct.
Last thing I'll point out that I noticed: the polar bear was a real polar bear in episode one, and in episode two, it seemed to be a toy of the little boy.
A stuffed toy.
Yeah, and it may have even been missing an eye in the toy.
Yes. I'm interested to see how that's going to work because, you know, DeMauro was the one who encountered the real polar bear, or at least the vision.
Oh, right. It wasn't Liz. Right.
It wasn't Liz. So we'll see. Yeah. We'll see what happens.
I am so excited to see Hank's mail order bride.
He's so good, too.
John Hawks.
Isn't he just like
gosh, I love that actor.
Never has a man been more catfished, and yet he's like, he's just so like, he's led by the nose. It's great. That really made me laugh. The where he's texting with her.
Yeah. Well, my one complaint. Yeah. Right. Well, my one complaint of the show is that I couldn't read the text messages clearly, so I just had to go on what he was doing right after to assume what it said.
He's like, oh, we'll be together soon. Something like, we'll be together soon. She's like, yes, but I'm worried about my mother. She's sick or
she's
something
sick.
Like that.
Dad, I figured it out because of what he said.
And he's like, well, I have more money. He's like, I've got some money left. You know, I can send it over to you.
I should really wear my glasses when watching TV if they're going to do text messaging. Yeah. Hey, that's it for True Detective Part 2. We are, you know, it's the nature of the game. We're a week behind, so most of you have probably watched Episode 3. I hope you're still with us, though, and enjoy what we have to say. Let us know. Rate, review us. This is audio only. You can always see us by going to the Alabama Takes YouTube channel and Taking It Down has a shorter segment each week, usually around 5 in the afternoon on Tuesday. You can watch it. Follow us wherever you want. Say hello to us wherever you want. And for Donovan, I'm Blaine, and that's it for this week.
Good night, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the ships at sea.